Nantucket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Rebecca Watson with guest Angelo Firmo, who actually just got disconnected. And so I'm going to, I want to talk to him. I want to ask him about affordable housing. I don't know if this is the situation across the entire state of Alabama, but specifically in Baldwin County, we have, you know, it's like we're in this weird conundrum where we want affordable housing, but we don't want to build apartment buildings and we don't want developers coming in taking up our land. And so there's a housing shortage. So it's, you know, I'm thinking like, how do you solve this housing shortage and have affordable housing without building a lot of new, you know, properties? And so, unfortunately, you know, there's a not enough housing for all of the people that live here. So anyway, is he back? Angelo, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, no, hey. I'm there.
Did you hear what I just said?
Yeah,
okay,
I did. And,
good.
And to answer your question on that, I think that what you're going to see, and I'm going through this similar right now with one of my children who's a young adult, and you know, he's in law enforcement, you know, and so he's starting out and trying to get situated where he can get a home and stuff like that. You know, obviously everything's so much more expensive than it was years ago. Interest rates are, you know, they're okay, but they're not great. I think some of the affordable homes within Baldwin County, you're going to have to see, you know, and that's on the federal level. Interest rates are going to have to come down a little bit. And I mean, and it's just may have shifted from where it was when I was a young adult career professional starting out, that you could go get a, you know, starter home, nice neighborhood, nice brand new kind of home, low interest rates and stuff like that. And it may not even be the case anymore. It may be where, you know, kind of the starter home now is you're into some of these other older subdivisions that you, you know, buy a house at a lower rate and fix it up and then try to move from there. I think you're still going to see development and growth in Baldwin County because they have so many people trying to move here per day. But, you know, that's kind of what we're looking at as the county is, you know, and as the new commission goes in, things to do better for the county to not just help it be affordable, but also preserve what we have here in Baldwin County.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy because we don't want all of these developments popping up everywhere, which with what I call California close homes, where, you know, you stand with your arms stretched between the houses and you can touch both of them.
Yes.
You know, people don't want that. And we also don't have, like, in our more rural areas like Bay Minette, you know, like my oldest son was also in law enforcement and there was nowhere for him to live out there.
Right.
And so there's, you know, but we don't want apartment buildings everywhere either. So it's
a tricky situation.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's, you know, I think some of these areas will grow and develop and there'll be different types of solution, whether that's townhomes or starting things like that, or you know, like I said, fixing up houses that are already established and kind of remodel and move on.
Yeah. One other thing that I find interesting is, so in Fairhope, or excuse me, where I live, we have a volunteer fire department.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Daphne has, their fire department is not a volunteer. Is that correct?
That's correct.
That's correct.
Yeah.
What about like Spanish Fort?
Spanish Fort has their own fire department.
They do.
Also.
So for communities that are rapidly growing, and you know, do you see the need, or maybe in the future? This was one of the concerns when we were, you know, talking about during our city council races. We need, you know, a fire department that is actually a paid fire department, not a volunteer fire department. How do you feel about that?
I think that, you know, me personally, coming from a first responder background, I think you need to have that. I mean, a lot of those people are volunteering their time and services for their community and stuff like that. And I think you need to have, especially places like Fairhope and some of these larger areas. I mean, that's just my opinion. I would personally like to see, you know, paid positions on these. You know, how do we get there? That's a lot of discussions and other things down the road. But I personally would like to see them paid and figure out some system where they, you know, they have the perfect equipment they need, they have all the resources they need, because, I mean, obviously different areas of the county have different needs. And sometimes you see fire departments backing each other up from different areas. And you know, there was a big fire the other day in kind of the county area of Baldwin County, but the area kind of stretched up into Daphne a little bit, and Daphne's fire department responded to it as backup, you know, so they're working together. But yeah, I do agree that if we could get these young men and women paid, you know, and figure out some way to get them better equipment and what they need, you know, I support that, you know.
Yeah, and also a few things I didn't even realize, and maybe people listening don't know this, but in 2013, my little boy died in an accident, and I had never had to call 911 ever. And I did that day, obviously. And the first responders that showed up was a fire department. And what I realized is, like, the fire department, they are the EMSs. They are, you know, their trucks should be able to do anything. And so a lot of the times they are the first people to show up. And it, like, timing is everything, and how fast they can get there. So I think when we're talking about life and death, you know, you can't really, I don't think we should be skimping financially on that at all.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, and that's the backbone and foundation of any community, safety and security, you know. Mm-hmm. And I've preached that, you know, when I was campaigning. People move to areas because of those responses and for those EMS situations and for those fire departments and the law enforcement, and everything else to me builds around that. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you feel safe, you know, people are coming to your rescue, you know, that, you know, you're going to be taken care of health wise, the rest of the community will grow and develop off of it.
Yeah, exactly. And then let's talk about switch over to the I-10 Mobile River Bridge.
Okay.
You know, the condition of our roads are, there's a big issue about that in Baldwin County. Do you support the toll on the new bridge? And, you know, if not, like, what are some alternatives?
I think that, again, I don't quote me on this, but I think that train's left the station on what they're thinking about doing with the tolls. And I don't think I think they're going to move forward with it regardless. I mean, this thing with the bridge and tolls has been going on for 5 or 6 years that I know of, that I've been in conversations with it and seen people out on the campaign trail with it. I never felt that, you know, I argued against this 4 years ago when they were talking about these tolls on the bridge. I didn't feel that I should have to pay a toll to go across the bay to see my family member or vice versa. You know, I felt that Baldwin and Mobile County residents, because we're so aligned with each other, that we should have had, you know, some type of path.
Right. Okay. So, well, I guess we're going to take a little break. And we will be right back if you can stick around.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Right up over Spanish Fort into Mobile, my hometown. Mr. T.
Welcome back. This is Rebecca Watson filling in for Jeff Poor, FM 106.5. We are being joined by Angelo Fermo, and we were just talking about the I-10 Mobile River Bridge and paying the toll. And Angelo, I totally agree with what you're saying. for the communities that have to go back and forth between Baldwin County and Mobile County?
I was just saying, I always thought that there should have been a way for passes between the people of Mobile and Baldwin County, because we travel back and forth so many times. I mean, I go several times a week, you know, and I know they're going to do some type of discounted rate and all that. I think that I've heard them talk about that they're going to do. But, you know, at the same time, I mean, you know, that I've been here 20 years. The Bayway and the bridge is clogged up because of, you know, it used to only happen during the summer times, and that was it, you know, and then we had the rest of the year. But now it's just constant, you know, growth and travel across the South. And so there's so many people traveling across I-10, and, you know, you see all that, and with that traffic jamming up and stuff like that. So, I mean, they're the ones that are impacting our roads and our ability to get back and forth to Mobile and Baldwin County. So they should be the ones having the impact on the tolls. You know, I do agree with that. But, you know, at the same time, I still believe that if I want to go see a family member in Mobile County, I shouldn't have to pay to drive across the bridge to see them. But, you know, I don't think they're going to go that route. I think they're going to go with the route of some type of you get a toll card and you pay less than what you would on a normal thing, and you can pay by year. Obviously, it's going to affect a lot of the trucking industries around here, a lot of the transportation services that we have that go back and forth. So it's going to impact, you know, the fees on that for them. I just wish that when they did that, they would have waived the residents of the two counties.
They still could, right?
Maybe they could. I don't. I haven't been in those meetings yet, so I can't tell you exactly.
We're not invited, you know, into those meetings.
Maybe I think I will be, you know, here in
Good.
November. But we got a little ways to go. So I get sworn in November 11th. Call me back after then. I might be able to give you some better updates on that.
Okay, because, you know, Danielle Duggar was here earlier, and she was saying the same thing. I think she said it was $60 a month. And, you know, when you add that up, what is that, over $700 a year? And her husband drives back and forth. You know, he works in Mobile. So
right.
I think you're right. I don't, you know, I think that somehow that is a good idea. And I think it should be suggested in the meetings that you're going to be invited into. So we can't wait to hear about that.
Good stuff.
What made you run for county commissioner, and what do you hope to accomplish?
Well, you know, I ran for county commissioner really because I had run for office once before. I was kind of out of politics. I kind of got back into it because a lot of the farmers in the area had asked me to get back into it. And this was a natural fit. So we kind of started doing it. And then it kind of just, you really see the impact that you're making at the local level here in the county. And your interaction is more day-to-day with people, with their issues. You're really actually affecting things here locally. I'm excited about it. I mean, you know, like I said, I go in office on November the 11th, but I'm already being brought up to speed on everything and asked questions about what do I see as this occurring in the county? What was my vision of certain departments? What do I see, you know, and inside the county commission there? I mean, inside the county, they're asking those questions to me. So it's good to start to be able to see that. I'm hoping to be able to bring some of my leadership and experience into that and actually support the men and women within the county and try to streamline it, make their job easier, and make things in the county better for everybody. I go back to, it's a pretty simple thing, and I've campaigned on it. I'll continue to say it is, we as the residents of the county, whether you're in a city or the county, you just got to have communication with one another. And I've noticed already in just my short time of since being elected, communication is the key. Sometimes you just tell somebody up front, hey, this is where I stand on this, and they get it and they understand it. And once they hear it, they at least know you're either like your opinion or they don't, but at least you're having communications with that. And I'm a strong believer in communications. Nobody can get mad at you when you're all up front and you're open about where you stand at on things. You know, as long as you tell the truth, how you feel, and you don't lie, you'll be all right.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I will be giving out your cell phone number to everyone listening. They can call you anytime. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Wait till I get my new county phone. You can get
okay. All right. Well, if anyone has any questions for Angelo, you can text him to 251-343-0106. I'll make sure that he gets them and put an email address or a way that he can contact you. You know, I remember when you were running, you know, before you were elected, I was, sometimes I would have to call you to ask you a question, and you were fixing, you know, people's, what, like sink, remember, like fixing their sinks, you're building a fence, yeah, you're at their house, dropping off sand for their driveway. I mean, you know, I think our county's lucky to have you because...
I get myself into more situations. I can't say no. If somebody calls me, says they need help, I'm coming.
Yeah. And I think that that's, you know, definitely what you have to have when you are an elected official, a servant's heart. If you're going to do a good job.
Like I said, you find somebody's true character and that's with every walk of life of how do those people act and engage in their daily activities, you know, when people aren't watching. And I think that shows you the true nature of people. You know, are they really good people, or are they just putting on a show? So I think that's the true character, you know. And I don't do any of the things I do for any accolades. Half the time I don't even tell people the stuff that I do. I just go do it, you know, and it is what it is, you know, and God sees it, and that's all that matters.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, you're definitely not a boastful person. So I'm looking forward to being able to listen to the meetings. And one of the issues I have with these county commission meetings is that the agenda items, you know, there's a lot of agenda items, and they each have like a C3 or a D2. And then, you know, you're talking about these agenda items in the work session, but if you don't, if you don't go to the work session, or you're not able to watch the work session, and you're only watching the county commission meeting, when things are voted on, they're not, the title of what they're voting on isn't ever discussed. And so, for instance, we have a big, big deal going on around here right now about one of the county commissioners' vehicles. She's gotten new vehicles every few years, and people don't like that. And so I wanted to kind of see what was, when it was voted on, how it was talked about. And it was really hard for me to find when that was discussed in a work session meeting, and who said what about it, who approved it. And then when I go watch the county commission meeting, I don't know what item number it is, because they're not saying new vehicle for county commission.
I think you're going to see some changes coming in with the new commission. There's going to be some changes into the work session, into the way that voting's done. Just to, you know, everybody's got their own different opinions, and they want to all put their stamp on their positions and stuff. But there are some changes. There's discussions already of some changes coming in when the new commission takes over, to give people the ability and a lot. And even us as commissioners give us time to review some of the items that are coming up. So there's actually discussions right now, changes coming on. I do think that you and some of the other people in the community that want that information will be able to see it and have more time to understand it. So, but yeah, there's changes definitely coming on that front, and I look forward to it.
Yeah, me too, because I think, like you said, along with communication comes transparency, and it can be really confusing for just a normal person who wants to know what's going on, if they don't understand what you're actually voting on. If they're trying to flip back and forth, it gets confusing.
No, I could see that. Yeah.
So, is there anything else that you are looking forward to, or want to accomplish in your term?
What I would like to accomplish in my term is, if we can set a path to Baldwin County that I can look back in 10 to 20 years from now and say, we started that, we made the impact. And I'm really passionate about our road development projects and stuff. I really want to see us be aggressive about that. I want to see that fixed. That's the number one complaint I heard on the campaign trail. Fix the roads. Please fix the roads. So that's it.
Okay. Well, hey, thank you so much for taking the time to join me.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, have a great day. And get ready, because Pastor Andrew Mullick is next. You are listening to The Jeff Forre Show, FM 106.5. Rebecca Watson filling in.
Or I may simply be a single drop of rain, but I will...
This is Rebecca Watson filling in for Jeff Poor, 106.5 FM. Andrew Mullick, pastor of Central Community Church for the last 11 years and also served as a missionary for 15 years before that. He's also the middle and high school supervisor and statistics and consumer math teacher at a private Christian school. And he's also the author of a book called The Truth Project. Welcome, Pastor Andrew.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Thank you for joining us. I really am excited about to talk to you because we're in, you know, I hear all the time how, you know, churches aren't standing up, churches aren't getting involved, churches aren't willing to talk about, you know, cultural issues. And I think it's that we've definitely gotten to a situation with our churches where they have become quiet about talking about certain things that are going on in communities across the state of Alabama. And so one of the questions that I have for you is, should Christians be involved in politics at all? You know, what does the Bible say about our responsibility to engage in government in our communities?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I would agree with you. I think that, you know, we really do need to be more outspoken. It's a huge concern of mine. That's why I wrote the book. A lot of our young people are being led by lies and led by culture and not by the church. And when the church is quiet, it creates a vacuum that other voices get to define truth and or even deny truth. And that's really the issue is what is truth and what are we looking to define that and how are we going to define that? And so where it comes to the role of the church, you know, we're told that we're meant to be the light, a city on a hill. We're meant to be salt. And if we're not influencing culture and we're not influencing government, I don't understand how we're fulfilling our mandate. And so we can't abdicate our responsibility here. It's imperative that the church's voice is heard, either what we believe is true or it isn't. But if it's true, if the Bible's true, and it's the source of absolute truth, then that should be what guides us in government in all parts of life. And we actually do use and did use the Bible to found our nation. And so churches really need to be standing up for truth. And to me, what's at stake is if we're quiet, truth becomes subjective. And that's a very bad slippery slope that now I get to define truth. I get to make it up as I go. And we're seeing the effects of that now. We're seeing what a silent church is causing, because now truth is whatever I want it to be. And you hear slogans like, speak your truth. So now each person gets to define truth on their level, whatever they think it is. And that's it's very dangerous, it's wrong, and I think it's the biggest problem we're facing as a culture and a society today is who gets to define truth and what is the source of truth.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think one of the things that I struggle with when I'm talking about, you know, whether it's the LGBTQ agenda to indoctrinate right. our kids, you know, how do we talk about this? You know, and maybe this is part of why the church struggles too, is that, you know, we're commanded to love our neighbors. And I hear this all the time. You're not a Christian, Rebecca, because you don't love your neighbor. And, you know, many Christians are called hateful simply because they disagree with certain ideas or lifestyles. So how do we love people the way Christ commanded while still standing firm on biblical truth?
That's a great question. I address that in the chapter. So I address six lies in the book, The Truth Project, and one of the chapters is the LGBTQ issue and the lie that love equals acceptance. And so the lie that this generation is being told is, well, if I love you, I have to accept what you do. And that's fundamentally flawed on a number of levels. We don't accept when people, hurt other people. We don't accept when people commit crimes. Love does not mean acceptance. And so one of the ways that I approach the LGBTQ issue is I don't just stigmatize that sin and that issue alone. I address it as a total sexual morality issue. So either we have a biblical standard for sexual morality or we don't. And I wouldn't be allowed as a pastor of a church to commit adultery and have multiple wives or have a bunch of girlfriends. You know, the church would say, no, we have a standard. We have a sexual moral standard here. And the LGBTQ argument falls underneath of that. And so we have a bigger foundation than just whether it's right to pursue that lifestyle. We have a moral code. And what's beautiful about the Lord's word is we find that wherever societies embrace this, they flourish. J.D. Unwin is an Oxford anthropologist that did a study of this. He wasn't even a Christian. He studied all the ancient civilizations, and he wanted to know what caused them to be successful. And biblical morality related to sexual issues was the indicator as to whether a society would be flourishing or not. Mm-hmm. And so there's a ton of statistics that support this, and I think we as Christians need to just stand on God's word and say, this is what God's word says. And the lie that has come up that the enemy has used is, well, love means that we accept it. Well, that's simply not true. And so you can love people without accepting things they do. And that's where the church really needs to land on this issue.
Great point. Do you believe that many churches have become hesitant to address these types of cultural issues out of Absolutely. Fear of offending people?
Yes. The church is being led by culture and not leading culture. And that is truly, I think, what's happening. You know, we're not the thermostat anymore. We're the thermometer. And so we're reflecting cultural trends. I've seen it when I was a kid. These things are not issues. I have aunts and uncles who would have held a very conservative view, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago. But because of the cultural trends and the normalization of these things, they are no longer willing to speak out against it and would probably find fault with what I'm saying. Mm. But that wasn't true 30 years ago. So they've shifted with culture, and that's happened in the church as well.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy how, it was such a gradual slide that it's almost like before we knew it, we were here.
Well, that's what I address in the book is the progression from the 1950s to today. This didn't start with LGBTQ or gender or transgender issues. This started back with sexual immorality, you know, the Summer of Love, 1960s. Then we brought in abortion and we brought in, you know, fornication. You go back and watch TV shows back in the 80s and 90s, and you'll see a gradual shift towards loosening of morals. And all of a sudden it became normal in the 90s to have an affair or to commit, you know, fornication or any other of those sins. It was just normal, and it was slow. It didn't start off where we are now. And so that I think is what we saw unfold. I actually track it in the book back to the teaching of evolution, because at that point we took away the creator and therefore we took away any need to listen to what he had to say. And right after we started teaching evolution in schools, we got all these other domino effects. And I think that's a big part of it. And so I would say from the 50s onward, we've been facing these issues. And we've seen from that point, when this really began to happen, we've seen a moral decline in our society. Crime has gone up, drug use has gone up, church attendance has gone down. You can track it out and you can see how it's impacted every part of our life.
Wow. And when you were writing that book, were you just kind of, I mean, were these all things that you knew, or were you just learning as you were writing?
Well, I was aware of it. I've been cataloging this information kind of in the back of my mind for years, and had been teaching it to students in classrooms, you know, hey guys, look at this, look at the progression. And finally, you know, I just felt like I needed to make a contribution to the culture war. I have to make my voice heard. And I think that I'm not going to stand by and be silent as a pastor or as a father. I've got to stand accountable before God, but I also need to, be able to look my kids in the eye. And 20 years from now, when the Bible, if the Bible were to ever become hate speech, which we're well on our way to have that happen, and I want to be able to say to them, I did everything I could to stand for truth and to stand for righteousness. And you know, that's all I can do. And so that book was birthed out of a realization that culture is taking us in a direction that it's not going to have a happy ending. And we, you know, we need to have eyes to see and understand the decline and understand where this momentum is taking us. And I think a lot of pastors, maybe they're just not understanding the shift in culture, or if they are, they don't know what to do, and they are afraid. They're afraid of offending people, and things have gotten normalized, and things have kind of become acceptable, and so they don't want to rock the boat. But I think if they were honest with themselves and they were to look forward 10 years or 15 years, they would see the issues, and it would hopefully encourage them.
Right. I agree. We're going to just take a quick break. We're talking to Pastor Andrew Mullick, and we will be right back. This is Rebecca Watson filling in for Jeff Poor, 106.5 FM. Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show. This is Rebecca Watson filling in. And we are being joined by Pastor Andrew Mullick. He is the author of a book called The Truth Project. And we're just having a little discussion on the church's responsibility in politics and the cultural shift that we've all witnessed. Thank you for sticking around. I appreciate it. I know your time is limited. So I wanted to ask one more question. I've really been doing a lot of research on communities and the Muslims that have been starting to, I mean, not only are they moving into communities and, you know, shifting the entire culture right. of communities, but they're now serving in, you know, like as a mayor or part of the city council on a school board. So I'm kind of watching this, and it doesn't feel like America to me when I'm watching this. So, you know, there's still relatively a small percentage of the U.S. population. And many Americans have noticed that they've grown, but I guess, you know, things are a lot more polarized because of social media too. But what I've noticed is that there's a lot of Americans converting, and it's easier to access the information. I think, you know, you can learn about different cultures and different religions with the internet. And so I'm just wondering, you know, you mentioned that there was a decline in, you know, the Christian churchgoers. So what do you know, as a pastor, what concerns you most about the future of Christianity in America? And is what we're witnessing today consistent with biblical prophecy regarding the end of times?
Oh, wow. So that last part
that's a big question.
Is a lot. You know, very much so. I think it's possible. I wrote another book called 7,000 Years, where we explore the possibility of that we could be living in the end times. And so there's that. But, you know, to go back to the original question of, you know, what we're seeing, it is very concerning. I think that in one respect, there's good things happening. Young people, you know, we saw this with Charlie Kirk. Young people are hungry for truth, and they are willing to seek it out. And so I think when you can give them something that's valid and truthful, then you can win them over. And they're hungry, and there's definitely some positives that are happening amongst our young people. But I think a lot of people have their head in the sand, and they're not really understanding what's happening culturally and so on, and even as it relates to the growing Muslim influence that you're referring to. You know, you look at what's happened in Europe, and, you know, Muslims have said, we'll take over Europe in so many years without firing a single shot. And they're doing it through immigration. Mm-hmm. And so the core issue of immigration is, I mean, the reason why the left wants immigration is because it's free votes. And so it's all about power. But it's also beneath that, beyond the voting demographics that they're trying to shift, is the cultural demographics. And so the lie that's now being told is that America is not a Christian nation. And we have kids going to school being taught this.
Mm-hmm.
We have people like myself that would say we're being called Christian nationalists. And that's mm-hmm. actually meant to be a smear. And this term was created by the left to smear anyone who says America's Christian. Well, we're fundamentally Christian. And our founders were very Christian, and they used the Bible more than any other document. And there's all sorts of great evidence of how Christianity formed our nation. It made us the greatest nation on earth. It gave us our freedom and our liberties. And the minute we deviate from that, we're going to have major issues. So I would never get to go to a Muslim country and try to make their government Christian. They would kill me or kick mm-hmm. me out or put me in jail, right? And
yep.
so why is it that we are allowing Muslims to come and influence our cultural identity? And we are a Christian nation. The lie that we're not is what's causing people to shift over to these other things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the scary part. I think if people will really examine the claims of Christianity versus the claims of Islam, I even addressed this Sunday at church, it's very clear that Christianity is true. It's historically accurate. There's thousands of prophecies in the Bible that are fulfilled and practically none in the Quran. And so it's a sham, but it's a lie. And I want to say one other thing that I think is contributing to this. You have to be able to tie everything together and understand the bigger picture, I think, of what's happening with the progressive movement. The progressive movement is governed by a spirit of Antichrist. And so it doesn't matter what's going on as long as it's Antichrist in nature. And so Muslims are Antichrist in nature. So they're going to be exalted, even if they're maybe not good for the country, because of the spirit that's behind what's pushing that.
Mm.
And people don't see that. That's why even Israel is an issue now, and the whole pro-Palestinian and pro-Hamas and all these things. Well, that's all going to be from the left, because that Antichrist spirit is what's pushing and promoting that. And the anti-Israel narrative is the same thing. And so I think it's all coming from the same place, and people are unwittingly and unknowingly attaching themselves to these things, and they're not recognizing the spirit that's behind it. So we got to do a better job of teaching people biblical truth, and then I think they'll have what they need. And truth is always going to win. If they have access to the truth, they're going to want to serve God. They're going to want to be believers, and they're going to understand that the Bible is God's word. And so that's what we've got to be working on.
Right. Well, since you brought up Israel, there's a lot going on, because we have people that are, you know, they believe that America first, we support the Israel people. We don't support the Israel government. There's no commandment that we have to do that. And so what do you think about that? What does the Bible say about that?
Well, we are to support Israel. There's definitely, I think they are God's chosen people for a reason. And I think that the people that bless Israel will be blessed.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, that doesn't mean I'm in solidarity with everything the government does. And I would say that there are very few free Christian nations in the world with influence that are going to fight for our values, if any. Israel's an ally. And it's very important to see that, for the most part, the Muslim world wants to wipe them off the face of the map. The enemy has always wanted to destroy Israel. Throughout history, Satan has tried over and over again to wipe Israel off the face of the earth, and he still is. And so the attacks against Israel to this day should remind us that if the devil hates Israel, there's a good reason why. And God's got his hand on Israel. He's going to come. Jesus is going to return to Israel. It's going to be a very important part of the end times. If we are indeed living in the end times, which I believe we are, Israel's going to be right at the center of that. And so, you know, knowing that the enemy's attacking it should tell us, well, that must mean God's behind it, first of all. And it, again, it's that spirit of Antichrist that is coming against the nation of Israel. Now, I don't have to agree with everything Israel does to want to support them, but I think it's wisdom for us as Americans to understand who is with us and who is not.
Thank you. And that was a great note to end on. We made it through the show. I did it. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Pastor Andrew. And tell us where we can find your book, The Truth Project in 7,000 Years.
It's on Amazon.com. under Andrew Mullick. Just look for the Truth Project and you'll find it.
Okay. Everybody, have a beautiful weekend. Welcome home, Jeff. Thank you so much.